Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is Pop Culture Confidential, and I'm Christina Yerling Biru. Welcome, everyone. We are going to look ahead at some of the biggest film releases coming up this late spring, summer, and even into the fall. And what a bounty it is. Even though we get reports on the state of the industry that are often so dire, there's a writer's strike looming, there are so many big movies coming out, interesting directors, buzzy titles. And what we're going to do today is run through a whole bunch of these, talk a little bit about them, and try our hand at predicting a bit if we think these are going to be a big box office hit, a critical success, what's going to happen with these movies. With me, returning favorite, critic, author, moderator, Thelma Adams. Thank you so much for joining me.
A pleasure. It gave me a chance to look forward instead of looking backwards and see what's coming up.
There's so many, right? I mean, it feels like it's quite a bounty compared to the sort of COVID years we were stuck in for a while.
There's a lot of biggies. There really are. There's a lot of big movies coming. And I think that the theme that that's going to come up is that what's been successful at the box office post-COVID, semi-post-COVID, has been these movies that are big.
Too few people saw Tar. I mean, even several anticipated comic book films like Shazam and things like that were a bit of a disappointment. So things are difficult to predict.
Super Mario Brothers. No one could have told me that it's also because I know my kids grew up playing the game and there's a huge audience for it. And yet I kind of was like, oh, who would want to see that movie? So there's also this kind of fracturing of the audience and the question of who's even going to the movies.
We're going to start in a completely different direction than that, because I thought we'd start with a movie that already has just premiered. So I wanted to talk a little bit about Ari Aster's Bo is Afraid, starring Joaquin Phoenix, because we've both seen this one. And I thought it was worthy of a short little opening discussion. What did you think?
Well, it could go longer. I thought this was a kind of prime example of relatively young male auteur who did Midsommar and Hereditary, which both movies I really like. Midsommar I love because it's so kind of out there. And then he gets carte blanche and Ari Aster makes this giant 3-hour movie. Now for me, unless it's Lawrence of Arabia or, you know, something, a 3-hour movie is a red flag. Like you. So for me, this movie was the story of a director, a writer director who got to do everything he wanted and was kind of not aware of what the audience would like. Now, I think looking at you, you might have liked it more than I did.
It's such a difficult movie to talk about, you know, because it's so out there. It's so crazy. But first of all, I think it's amazing that we still get to see movies that someone can take these huge chances with, that A24 can take these huge chances with. It's not a perfect movie, but it was actually my favorite of his three.
Okay.
The first hour of anxiety-ridden guilt trip horror, I thought was a masterpiece. I don't know what that says about me, but being in the head of someone who has and seeing what a panic attack looks like on screen, because this is obviously not a real street he lives on or a real apartment. It is, but what he's seeing is in his head.
We think.
Yes, we think. The suburban nightmare family that he ends up with that are suppressing grief so much that they're literally, so I don't want to say too much here, but I mean, that is, I thought also was incredible. Patti LuPone at the end of the movie is going to go down in history as a Mama Norman Bates. Fantastic. She does it so well. I thought the whole mother guilt trip. Then there's a part in the middle for me, for those who haven't seen. I mean, basically he's in the forest and it's a theater group that I thought meandered and didn't work for me as much. So, I mean, it's in no way perfect, but I have to say it's the one of his three that I really have thought about afterwards and have discussed. And I also thought it was just a beautiful film. Visually, it was so interesting.
Visually. So the basic story is this, just so people know. The basic story is Bo, played by Joaquin Phoenix, at his most unattractive middle-agedness, like his bald, you know, his male pattern balding, whether they made it or not, his horrible clothes, his pudginess, and he is planning to go visit his mother, and he can't kind of get out the door. She dies, and then it becomes his odyssey to get to the funeral, because he's her only son. So that's kind of the story is that. Now, for me, that opening with all the anxiety, he's living like the Omega Man in an urban apartment, and he's freaked out, and he's scared, and he's...
Everything he can be scared of is elevated. The violence on the streets. I mean, people are literally shooting each other. He has to run over it. Fires. The medication he has to take. If he doesn't take it exactly as instructed, he starts Googling. One can recognize these things in small doses.
Right. So for me, as a moviegoer, I was like, I have enough anxiety, like based in reality, that I found that... I didn't really need to step into this man's anxiety. But okay, so let's say we do.
I respect that.
Let's say we do, and that's, you know, bottom line, Phoenix is great the whole movie.
Right.
And the casting is great.
Parker Posey, Patti LuPone, both incredible.
Yeah, and Nathan Lane.
Yes.
And Amy Ryan are this suburban couple. And they're kind of in that very much that hereditary Midsummer way where they seem normal at first, but it's not exactly. But I felt like the lumps, the beginning, the suburban part. Then there's the wild theater camp section.
Exactly.
Let's call it theater camp. You know, stage camp section where he's out in the wilderness and there's this makeshift theater. And it turns out it's kind of the story of his life, maybe, or what his life could have been. It's beautiful visually. It goes into animation, the costumes, the way it's structured, all of these things are wow. I just didn't think the whole thing cohered.
I mean, it definitely is uneven. There, I think he, as you were saying at the beginning, he got carte blanche. And with a little bit of adjustments here and there, for me at least, because for me, the beginning was emotionally engaging right. And actually really funny. I was laughing a lot. But it did, it is an uneven film. I mean, no doubt about it. So, well, interesting. What do you think in terms of, did solid business this second week in the States where it's gone? I think it's up to 3 million. Feels like Ari Aster has a fan club. Now that they all have seen it stateside, do you think that this will go well? It has a $35 million budget.
Which he got a lot out of his $35 million. It's not a $200 million. It's $35 million. And at the screening I went to in the other theater, I was in the Overflow Theater. Martin Scorsese was interviewing Ari Aster. So clearly people see him as a serious filmmaker. I just think if you believe that artists should be able to fail, try things and fail, than in this case, or, you know, not knock it out of the park, then I think he got to go out and try different things, that it doesn't all fit together. Okay. And honestly, now I'm looking forward to Napoleon with Joaquin Phoenix. Because we'll he had seen Napoleon in his odd balding head, you know. I could see it coming. So
either way, if it's not a financial success for A24, I don't think that really matters to them, because I think this is, they are so credibility and their whole name, the whole A24 brand, and being able right. to really put money into someone like Ari Aster.
I am curious to see how much of a tail it has, how much repeat business. But I think you're right that people are Ari Aster fans. And if you're that person, you would go. Mm-hmm. And in my case, since I loved Midsommar, I would have gone anyway.
Well, let's move on to another beloved male auteur who once was young, at least, and that's Wes Anderson. Because in June, he's coming back with Asteroid City. Young. Story by Roman Coppola. It's going to be out in June. It'll be out in Cannes before. Looks very, very Wes Andersony, as most of his films do. It follows some transformative events that occur at an annual junior stargazer convention in 1955 and has a huge cast, including Jason Schwartzman, Scarlett Johansson, Tom Hanks, Tilda Swinton, Bryan Cranston. I can go on and on and on. Are you looking forward to a new Wes?
Kind of hope springs eternal. Mm-hmm. It's hard from a trailer to know if this is a Wes Anderson movie that really lands or not, because you see all of the amazing little things, and I love Jason Schwartzman and his brand of irony, you know, his deadpanness often.
So which Wes Andersons have landed for you and which haven't?
Moonrise Kingdom. Mm. Fantastic Mr. Fox. Oh, The Grand Budapest Hotel, one of my absolute favorite. But you could watch the trailer from Grand Budapest Hotel and this trailer, and you wouldn't know which ones worked. You know, the trailer is always going to feel Wes Anderson-y. Let's see if this has some kind of plot or connection so that you feel for these characters, because sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. But I'm overall, I would say I'm a Wes Anderson fan.
I just love seeing a new Wes Anderson trailer. I'm a huge Rushmore fan. The Royal Tenenbaums to me is his absolute best. I'm always looking forward to Wes Anderson. The more Wes Andersonioni, the better for me. But of course, I know what you're saying. Sometimes it gets so big and the cast is so huge and the stories are so disjointed and that you don't get that connection with the character as you would, for example, in Tenenbaum,
right.
with Gwyneth Paltrow's character, right. where you feel just emotionally wrecked. And sometimes that sort of eludes him because the creativity is so big. And so that's what I'm hoping for, because this cast is immense. So I'm hoping immense. It doesn't get lost in there. Otherwise, I'm always looking forward to him.
Yeah, I would agree. I would want to be there first night. Yeah, yes. First chance I get to see it, I want to go. When it goes to Cannes and it gets reviewed, I'll be looking at the opening two paragraphs, but I don't read reviews before I see something any more than that. Because I want to be able to go in fresh. God knows we've been watching Succession. And if you don't see it the night it comes out.
That's it.
then you
As Brian Cox would say, you're fucked.
You're fucked, as Brian Cox would say. And you've talked to him and he probably said, you're fucked to you.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Moving on in June, we have, which is very talked about today as you and I are speaking, and that's The Flash, because that premiered and is talked about at the convention CinemaCon. Now, this is a film directed by Andrea Muschietti, and it stars Ezra Miller as Barry Allen, The Flash, Michael Keaton. Now, as everyone probably knows, there's huge controversy around Ezra Miller, who think they call himself they, so I don't say it wrong. They have been involved in some sort of crime spree all over Hawaii and police issues. And so that's going to be a big issue with this movie. Also, there's a certain amount of comic book fatigue, as we can see, like in Ant-Man and Shazam didn't go too well this year. What do you think about The Flash? The word from CinemaCon is that it's incredibly good.
Well, the Ezra Miller thing is interesting because he is a Hollywood baby, started very young. They started very young. He has adopted the pronoun of they. The question is whether he'll be able to. One of the reasons he acts the way he does, and he's a great actor, but one of the things is that he's in touch with so much chaos. And I don't know if he'll. I'm amazed that the corporation has let it go this far and kept him in. Jonathan Majors, you know, example, boom, 1 minute the cover of what, like Esquire, and the next minute, I only say we'll see.
And Batgirl, which didn't even have any controversy, but was already done, about to be released, that they just didn't release for tax reasons. So it's easy enough for them to say, no, we're not doing this one, we're not doing that one.
That is almost less of a problem of people behaving badly. Let's put it that way. Okay, so Ezra Miller, person who behaved badly, and then you know there's a range between 1 and 10, you know, Tucker Carlson la, la, la. But I think this idea of the corporation shutting down something is very dangerous. The movie's in the can, and I think that there's an arrogance among corporate leaders where they think they know what's good, what sells. And as we saw kind of in the HBO Max becoming Max, losing its identity, all of these things that we love that really stepped out of the box. Once they get bought by some huge corporate thing, there's a danger that you won't get the relatively daring storylines.
Yes, like something like Everything Everywhere All at Once, which took no one saw coming would take every single Oscar and box office.
Right. And that's because, again, like you were saying, A24, that's because they have independence relatively. You know, basically, HBO Max was just emasculated. Who knows where they'll be? What happened to Discovery? All of these big changes will have an impact on what we see. And the movies we see.
But this one, The Flash, is definitely not a small, and as we can see, it won't be canceled, irregardless of Ezra Miller's background or what is. Yeah. What my prediction is that this is going to go gangbusters. It's going to be huge. Everyone says it's great. Everyone says they are great, Ezra Miller, Keaton, but they're not going to use Ezra Miller in publicity. As much as they,
yeah, I think that's a good idea
that they would be able to do. And
I am with you on that. When you have The Flash and Batman, and you have Ben Affleck and Michael Keaton and Ezra Miller, who, however cuckoo he is, and I don't want to make light of what he's done, however, whatever crimes he's committed, he's a very committed actor, and his performance will be great. Or their performance will be great, whatever the backstory.
Well, let's move on to another huge franchise that we already know a lot about, and that's Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, also coming in June and premiering in Cannes, directed by James Mangold. So this is going to be the fifth and final installment in the Jones film series. It stars Harrison Ford, again, as the archaeologist Indiana Jones. We have wonderful Phoebe Waller-Bridge is going to be Antonio Banderas. We're going to get to see a de-aged Harrison Ford in this movie, at least for, I think, about 30 minutes of it. What do you think? Are the kids interested in Indiana Jones?
I've got to say, Harrison Ford, he's having a hair renaissance. Harrisona?
Fordisons.
Whatever you would call it.
Yeah.
He's currently in Shrinking, and he's so good, and he's in 1923. These are the movies I love. I love Indiana Jones movies. And they're really rooted in those old Hollywood serials. And I think Harrison Ford just brings it in something like this. He's all, you know, if you watch him in Shrinking, he is so funny and so good. He still has it. And his ego is not at all in the way. And I love these movies. Phoebe Waller-Bridge, great addition. And it'll just be a really fun adventure. James Mangold is a very good director.
Good choice. Ford v. Ferrari and Logan.
Yeah, and he's in the indie world, so he really also makes sure that the characters are multidimensional. And he does have enough experience to do the big tricks that he's going to have to do. And this is the kind of movie, again, where you could go see it on a date. You could see it with your partner. You could see it with your girlfriends or your friend circle. And you can take your kids and have a good time. And I think one of the things that remains about going to the movies is if you're a parent of children, it gets you out of the house. It's an event. It's a memory.
Yeah, you're but that, that it hasn't been that way until Super Mario, really. People didn't go to the Pixar movies the past year or so, even with family after COVID was opening up.
Right.
I think it's just so expensive, you know.
I think it's so expensive. I think that, I mean, we're talking about the movies that are coming up. I think there's a huge dilemma, and we don't know yet what's going to solve it. All of the consolidation is not going to solve it. And if it's good, people will go see it. The little movies are more in danger than a movie like that. That one has a pedigree, has a big star. It has, generations invested in that series, and it hasn't been overworked like the Star Wars episode 29,
milked to the end.
My thought is that that's like one of the ones I'm really looking forward to this summer.
My prediction is that also that this is going to be a hit. I don't think it's going to be quite as big a hit as The Flash, because I do think the younger generation have a couple movies to choose from before they go see this one, but then they will if word of mouth is great. I want to mention a smaller movie here. I didn't get a chance to see it.
Coming up on 5 Minute News, I'm Anthony Davis. You might think it's partisan because maybe it's critical of one side or the other, but it's not. It's just the truth. And I think that's also something that's kind of unusual for Americans listening to the radio or to podcasts, because the news landscape in the States has been so partisan for so many decades. So 5 Minute News is verified, truthful, independent, unbiased, and essential world news daily.
But it's one of the most buzzed about films out of the early festivals, and that's Past Lives. It's also coming in June. It's a romantic drama directed by Celine Song, her directorial debut with Greta Lee. And it follows like a reunion of two childhood friends and then their new relationship today. And what I'm seeing and hearing and reading from people when they have just seen it, it feels like this could be one of the big Oscar buzzy movies.
Yeah, very possible. I saw it in Berlin. I saw it when I just got there and it was 9 a.m. And I'm like, okay, it had been overbuzzed for me. Like my expectations were too high. So I actually am going to see it again. Mm-hmm. The distributors giving me shit for thinking that, saying that it was overhyped. So I'm going to go give it another try, because when you're jet lagged and it's 9 a.m. and I know I can say this about it. The performances are fantastic, and it's a romantic story that you have not seen before.
Okay, well, I'm looking forward to it, and I want to hear what you see on a second viewing to see if it melts your heart.
Yeah, maybe my heart's just too made of tin. Oh, I don't know on that.
Well, moving on to another huge June release is, of course, Tom Cruise, Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1. So this is the first part of two that I think are going to be the last of the mission. So the last part of the Mission Impossible films, again, written, produced, and directed by Christopher McQuarrie. Will Tom Cruise pull it off again? Do you see this being the same amount of box office gold as Top Gun?
Yeah, I actually, maybe not exactly, because Top Gun was only had only a movie like years ago. Mission Impossible, now you're on this. The only thing that scares me about this is part one. I'm like, okay, one thing about Tom Cruise, and he produces it, and he's the star. And
he almost kills himself every time with the stunts.
He's someone who understands what a blockbuster audience wants. And he may kill himself trying to do the stunts, but he really does know. And do I love Tom Cruise? No, not particularly as a human. But I would say he has taken the Mission Impossible franchise and just, he knows how to make it work. And people will pay money to go to the movies for something that they know will entertain them. They know, you know, it's like getting Good and Plenty or getting a Cadbury chocolate bar. You know it's going to taste good. So you know this Mission Impossible will deliver. It's a kind of a sure thing. Do you have a different opinion?
A little bit. I mean, I'm comparing to Top Gun Maverick, which took me by surprise a bit, the how incredibly, enormously successful it was with all generations. I didn't really see younger generations taking to this kind of old-fashioned story. So that success, no. I don't think he'll do that again the year after. If you like the Mission Impossible films, then you go and see this film. And I think there's so many things competing with it in June in a way that Top Gun didn't have, that I don't think it's going to be a flop, but it's not going to be the gangbusters or success that he had last year.
Okay. I feel like it's inevitable. And I feel like
he owns us all, Tom Cruise. Moving on to July, I want to mention Joyride, which was really had a lot of buzz out of South by Southwest, which is also a feature directorial debut, a comedy by Adele Lim. I think I'm going to love this movie. It's Ashley Park, Sherry Cola, Stephanie Hugh, Sabrina Wu. It's a bunch of childhood friends who accompany their former roommates on a journey to China to find one of the girl's birth mothers. And it looks like an hysterical comedy, crazy, crazy scenarios, really raucous and out there. And I think my prediction for this one is that this could really be the breakout small hit that really everyone is talking about.
Yeah. And Stephanie Hugh really has stepped up. Yes. You know, she's in Mrs. Maisel. She stepped off. So I think that people are recognizing the talent that's in this, and it just looks like a good time. And it is part of this, the rising, like beef, the rising tide of Asian American filmmakers, artists finding a voice in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is a recipe for success.
Moving on in July, another movie that I think is going to be huge. Interesting to see what you think. That is Greta Gerwig's Barbie, co-written with her partner, Noah Baumbach. It's based on the doll, the Barbie doll, live action with Margot Robbie, who also is producing this and actually brought Greta Gerwig into this. Ryan Gosling plays Ken and a huge supporting cast.
Crazy huge. Yeah.
Crazy huge. The trailers, the teasers for me have all looked like they couldn't have chosen a better team than Greta and Noah to elevate this IP that we all grew up with to new levels. Can there be feminist ideas in here? Are there going to be stuff for adults and kids? What is the tone? I think it looks like it could be amazing. What do you think?
Well, it has really good buzz. From the screenings that have been in LA, the kind of secret screenings, and then you hear that everybody is ecstatic about it. From watching the trailer, I couldn't tell. Like, you know, it's funny bit, funny bit, funny bit. Hope springs eternal. I actually am not going to ignore the buzz and be positive about it and think, okay, because I always have this thing. And if Greta Gerwig was brought in by Margot Robbie, I mean, she's at the top of her game right now, Ryan Gosling. I kind of, and Greta and I may disagree on this, I kind of wanted her to go in a direction more like Lady Bird, where she was telling stories that were completely original to Hollywood because she had access. But it's not my career, it's her career.
But she's and done so many of those.
Yeah, so let's see. I feel like the buzz that's bringing it in is very positive. And Margot Robbie, who had two Love very her. Big busts this year, but still was wonderful in everything she was in. There's possibility. We'll see when I see it.
She's such an interesting producer, though. I mean, she really has her company's produced everything from I, Tanya to Promising Young Woman. I think she has an eye for interesting female characters with a sort of sarcastic, not that's the wrong word, but a different tone, a tonality that have something to say underneath. But my prediction is, because strangely enough, if they don't move it, which I actually think they should, Barbie is premiering on the same weekend as Christopher Nolan's Oppenheimer. Always looking forward to him. So these are going to go head to head. This is the upcoming biographical film. He's written and directed it about J. Robert Oppenheimer and the father of the atomic bomb and his role in the Manhattan Project, with also a huge ensemble. Let's just say there's been work for everyone this year. Everyone from Robert Downey Jr. to Matt Damon to Rami Malek, Florence Pugh, Kenneth Branagh. I mean, that's just some of them. This is the same weekend as Barbie at the moment. And I'm predicting that Barbie is going to win big this weekend.
Fascinating prediction. Yes. Playing the title role is Cillian Murphy, who is a great actor, and I'm a Peaky Blinders addict. So love him. And I'm interested to see it. You know, it's like Chris Nolan is a serious filmmaker. He's writing about the Manhattan, it's a movie about the Manhattan Project. So the question maybe is there enough room for two movies that have very different audiences and moods?
But these are two serious filmmakers.
Well, okay, she's a serious filmmaker doing this. I'll give you that.
Prediction, we'll see. We'll have to talk again after. I just think
to talk again, but that's a big weekend.
Which one goes better, that we'll have to wait and see. But I think if they continue to be on the same weekend, I think it's going to be really interesting.
And they'll have legs, which is important. It's exactly. Important to bring people back into the theaters second week, third week, fourth week, and on.
Another movie I predict is going to be huge in July is a super small horror movie called Talk to Me, which I saw at Sundance, directed by two brothers from New Zealand who already are huge Instagram stars, Danny and Michael Philippou, which basically is a super small movie about young woman and her friends who are embroiled in sort of a seances that they do in the evenings to get kicks, really sort of teenagers. And it was really, really, really good with the teeny
tiny
budget.
Was it really
budget.
Scary? The trailer looks scary.
It's scary and it's pretty gory, that to be warned. But I think, in this huge summer of big, this could be also one of those little things that suddenly people just, what happened there?
Like a Jordan Peele, like an early Jordan Peele movie.
Exactly. Right. And all of a sudden it could, thinking of how we all reacted seeing it Sundance, I think this could be something that a lot of kids go to see, the ones who don't want to see Barbie.
Well, a lot of choice.
Moving on a little bit to the rest of the year, we have three big movies we want to talk about. One is Killers of the Flower Moon, Scorsese's huge movie will be out in Cannes, but it'll be out in October, based on the 2017 nonfiction book by David Graham about the Oklahoma murders in Osage Nation. I think it was in the 20s, right? This is his seventh outing with Leonardo DiCaprio, great cast with Jesse Plemons. And you that are a little sensitive to how long movies are, I think this is 340.
340?
Yeah. So he's in Irishman territory here. It's a big swing for Apple if it's a $200 million budget. What do you think? I mean, could this be a theatrical hit? What does Apple have to gain? I mean, I'm always there for Scorsese, so I will be there.
Yeah, that's the thing. Apple has to gain this. Scorsese, the gold standard. You know, that's if you have Scorsese on your team at Apple, it's a status thing. Now, there's good Scorsese and bad Scorsese. I myself, and De Niro's in this movie as well.
Yes.
I am in the minority. Leo doesn't do it for me. Young Leo was great, but as an adult, he's not my favorite star. So we'll have to see. It's a fascinating story. It's a fascinating chapter of American history. And obviously it's Oscar bound, given its placement in the, you know, in the fall lineup. So it won't be long before we can see if it runs, if it works.
Because I love DiCaprio. I thought he was amazing in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I think he's such an interesting actor. He doesn't feel like he's desperately trying to be young in action movies and franchises, and he's working with his big directors. He's doing interesting projects, and I actually think that this could be bigger than The Irishman. I think this could have more broad appeal in terms of DiCaprio, in terms of the themes of the film.
I agree.
I don't know what's happening theatrically with these Apple films. I mean, if people really will wait for it to get to Apple, and then we won't even know the numbers. But in terms of Oscar and things like that, I think it could, as you're saying, get a lot of buzz.
Yeah, and I think it's an Oscar contender if you look at this whole group. There's no question. And we'll know more at the end of the month after Cannes when it premieres. We'll have a different sense of what's going to happen.
Two more here. I've jumped over one in August that we have to talk about, and that's another Oscar contender, I think, and that's Helen Mirren and Golda. The biographical drama.
Which I saw in Berlin.
Tell us.
I really liked it. And mm-hmm. I think she's amazing. And it's kind of a movie like The Queen or when she played Margaret Thatcher. I'm sorry, Meryl played Margaret Thatcher. It's one of these, she just steps in. Helen Mirren's so beautiful and so sophisticated. And she steps into Golda Meir's orthopedic shoes, basically. And she has like fat ankles and her skin's all spotty and she's chain smoking and it's at this crisis moment. And it's really the portrait of this groundbreaking Israeli leader, female leader, at a moment of crisis. Now, one of the problems is going to be that some people will not know who Golda Meir is. We all know who the Queen was. We all knew who Margaret Thatcher was. But also the fact that Israel right now is in such a, and has always been, but is right now in such a complicated political place that there may be people who think it's a falsely positive picture of Golda Meir and her legacy. And so it's one of those movies where it's not just what's on the screen, it's also what people are currently thinking about Israel and its place in the world. So that's going to interest me, because it will get a lot of responses, not just within the film community, but like in op-eds in the paper, in newspapers about this portrayal of Golda Meir. But I really, really, really liked her in it and liked her characterization.
Barring discussions and what could happen with the film, is she Oscar worthy?
Yes. It also then depends on how many women are up for Best Actress, like where that whole, and whether people feel like there are other parts of this film that kind of, you know, push her ahead. But yeah, yes, I don't think you can think about next year's Best Actress category without considering Helen Mirren as Golda.
Well, let's do the last one. Worthy of being the last big picture. I think both Napoleon and Ridley Scott would say so, that they have their epic historical drama coming out in November, as it seems right now, unless they change that. As you were mentioning at the top of the show, Joaquin Phoenix, we started with him, we're ending with him. He is Napoleon. And it depicts, of course, the French leader's rise to power. Vanessa Kirby plays Empress Josephine. We have Tara Rahim in it, Ben Miles. Ridley Scott, what is he's almost 90 now, isn't he?
Yeah, I talked to him at one point for Variety, and we talked about that. And he's like, I just, you know, and this was 5-7 years ago, he was like, I know how to make a movie now. You know, now I want to make
movies. He sure does.
You know, he does, and he's not known for a long time. But there's nothing slowing him down. And I think this is the kind of movie that's going to be better for Joaquin Phoenix. And I can't wait. A good Napoleon is hard to find. Mm-hmm. And I love Vanessa Kirby. And it will be both a sweeping historical, a love story, and a portrait of someone who is maniacal. So what, I mean, that seems to me, you know, looking back at Gladiator, looking back, that's something I'm looking forward to, a well-made movie about Napoleon.
I believe they showed a bunch of really epic battles at the CinemaCon. There's right. Some good stuff. I think this is going to be huge. I mean, if Ridley Scott does what he does well, that he really brings out the relationships between these huge epic people, that you really don't just get the battles, but you get the interpersonal succession-y relationships that
right.
You can bring.
Right, succession-y relationship yeah. stuff, yeah.
I think this could be amazing. Also an Oscar contender, and I'm really looking forward to this. I mean, it could be a bomb too, that he can't really control that narrative.
I don't think it's going to be a bomb. I have a question though. Where do
House
we think?
House of Gucci'd. But apparently Joaquin Phoenix is doing his regular accent in it, luckily. He's not trying to do some kind of Frenchy French.
Yeah. House of Gucci, yes. Lady Gaga, yes. I understand that. He had back-to-back movies that didn't exactly hit. We'll just say that. Some people disagree with me on that. But I'm curious to see this year, like, where are the Oscars going? You know, as we see Past Lives, the movie we talked about that I saw in Berlin, we see these kind of smaller movies marching towards Oscar, we're looking at the big ones. But we did just come out of a season of Oscar campaigning that was way too long, and then the payoff was not that great.
Well, I was very happy. I really liked Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Yeah, yes, I agree.
All these big auteurs, I mean, Steven Spielberg and the other one that historically would have been the winners at the Oscars 10, 15, 20 years ago, that seems to be not happening anymore. So maybe Ridley Scott and Scorsese and these bigger ones that we're talking about will take the backseat to something like Past Lives. Oscar.
Well, we'll have to see. I think in the end, there's a lot of change in the industry, a lot of consolidation, a lot of change in terms of gender parity and bringing in Asian Americans, African Americans, you know, really being inclusive. All of these changes are happening. And the primacy really of TV, the way that TV has sucked so much talent, the conversation is really TV.
It's going to be a very important year to see because people are sort of divided. Are people going back to the theaters? Or are people not going back to the theaters? And I think this summer could really give the indication whether people are, because the restrictions are over. There's huge movies with all kinds of genres for everyone's taste. If people still don't go out to see the movies in any form of numbers, it's going to be sort of an indication that something really big has happened in terms of theatrical.
Right. It's interesting. I have a local, and everybody has their local art house theater. Ours is Upstate Films, or the Star Theater. And the documentary filmmaker Robert Stone and I have started doing film club, which is much less, much more relaxed. This week we showed the Little Richard documentary by Lisa Cortez, which is fantastic.
It's really
but it
fantastic.
Was a Thursday night. The theater maybe held 120. We got about 180 people who came, talked about the movie. It wasn't like we talked about it on stage for a half an hour and everyone went home. We then adjourned to a bar and everybody can talk about the movie or anything else they want to talk about. And I think that there's probably ways in terms of art house movies where you're going to have to create a local community.
Eventize, something nice to drink, something to talk about. I think so too. I think you have to do something else for the audience today to get them into the theater. Either it's a bunch of really great night for a bunch of teenage kids who want to see their superhero. They want to have popcorn. They want to be scared at the horror movie and kiss. And, you know, it's an event for a whole group of people. Or you
right.
have the art house. You don't get a lot of people just, let's go see a movie on a Friday. They can stay home and see fantastic Succession. But if you do what you're doing, then you get people in for discussions. There's a little bit of extra. I think going to the movies is much more of an event for all ages.
And we showed old movies. We showed The Conformist, the Bertolucci movie, mm-hmm. and a lot of people had not seen that one. And so we had a great discussion afterwards over margaritas. You know, we've been showing different ones to see. And also, I just want to emphasize that there are so many good documentaries coming out.
So good.
Also, and just put in a word for the Little Richard documentary by Lisa Cortez that will ultimately be on CNN and Max, but now is in theaters.
Yeah, I loved it. And definitely take the time to go see that. Absolutely. But Thelma, what we're going to do is we'll have to sometime come November, December, remember what we said, and we'll meet up again and see how wrong
we'll
or how right
this.
We were. Yes.
How right or wrong we were.
Yeah.
And then we thank you very much for inviting me. It's such a pleasure.
Thank you so much again.
Hello, and welcome to Novel Conversations, a podcast about the world's greatest stories. I'm your host, Frank Lavallo, and for each episode of Novel Conversations, I talk to two readers about one book, and together, we summarize the story for you. We introduce you to the characters, we tell you what happens to them, and we read from the book along the way. So if you love hearing a good story, you're in the right place. Our ninth season is coming this fall. Tune in to hear from some of the all-time great authors, Charles Dickens, Jules Verne, F. Scott Fitzgerald, and more. Subscribe to Novel Conversations wherever you listen to podcasts.